is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads podcast. It's Mike Lensing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are recording on Friday evening, immediately following Game 6 of Rockets-Warriors. Jason, your immediate reaction to Rockets-Warriors Game 6?
We are who we thought the Rockets were. Or they are who we thought they were. Right. I think that's the immediate reaction. The best telling thing that happened was, I don't know if it was tied or it was a 2-point game, but you sent a text saying, "I'm ready for another Harden choke job." And I don't think we can lay this completely on the feet of Harden, but they had so many opportunities in this game and they just didn't convert. And you think they didn't have Durant, or Golden State didn't have Durant. Steph Curry was basically didn't play the first half because he was in foul trouble the whole game. Golden State trotted out Andrew Bogut to start this game. How can you not find a way to extol that and just expose that and just take advantage of it? I don't know. I just think they are who we thought they were, sadly for us. And now we're stuck with the inevitable. I think we're safe to say that the Warriors will beat whoever wins this other series. So Warriors are in the finals. Congrats.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they're clearly going to beat either Portland or Denver, whoever comes out of that series. And I know I sent you that text, and I do agree with you to some degree here that it wasn't all on Harden, but two terrible turnovers in the last 4 minutes of the game. The one where he inbounded it and Clay came in and stole it, and then the second one where he was double teamed and chucked the ball across half court to nobody. Those are two terrible turnovers at critical moments. It just feels like Houston just can't make the right play, the big play, at the moment when it needs to be made. And, you look at Harden's stats, and he ended up with 35, and he had 8 rebounds. He had 5 assists. He did have 6 turnovers. But he just didn't make the plays at the exact critical moment when they needed to be made. Yep. And then you flip it around to the other side, and Steph did everything you could possibly want a superstar player to do in the absence of Durant. I mean, he had a terrible first half, didn't score, and yet it's a 57-57 game at the half. Clay has 21, so Clay carries in the first half. Steph comes out and ends up getting, what do you have, 31, I think, tonight?
Is 33. He made 2 free throws.
So 33, and then, of course, they flash that stat in the fourth quarter that he's made 78 free throws in a row in the fourth quarter in overtime. It's just incredible. He was every bit as good as he's ever been in that fourth quarter and just made every critical play that was necessary, every critical basket. And that's what made the difference. Curry was just better than Harden in the second half. And I don't know if you're Houston, I don't know what you do, because now you're hamstrung by, proverbially, you're hamstrung by Chris Paul's contract. And
By the way, I thought Chris Paul played great tonight, Mike.
He played really well. I agree. Played tremendous.
And it's just they could never get the three together because Eric Gordon played terrible tonight. He had a few times where he had one or two offensive fouls. He was completely lost. And I don't know. I just think, I don't know if this would happen, but and I don't necessarily know that there's a candidate to take his job, but you got to think the clock's ticking on D'Antoni here, Mike. I don't know. I just think, yes, he's successful, and yes, they've been in the playoffs, and they've been competing at a high level, but they just can't get over the hump, and I don't know.
At a certain point, though, I don't know if it's the coach. I still, obviously, I've been on this train since we started the podcast, and I was on it long before we started it. I just don't think you're going to win a title when Harden's your best player. I just don't. I mean, you look at his history, and he's never proven to come up huge in big games. I mean, he just hasn't. I mean, yeah, he's had good games in games that are important. But if you look at all the biggest games, all the biggest moments of his career, I mean, we can go through them. Let's look at how he performed when he was with the Thunder against the Heat in that first NBA Finals. He disappeared. You look at the game that Houston came back and beat the Clippers, which was in theory a big moment, but he was on the bench for that entire, you know, 19 point Howdy. Comeback in the fourth quarter. He wasn't even in the game. And then the game against San Antonio, game six at home, completely no shows that one. Last year, you know, they go 0-27 from three, lose to the Warriors, and Harden was terrible. Tonight, I don't think you could say he was terrible, but he's not the superstar performance that I would have expected or I would have wanted out of my number one player. I just don't think he's good enough. He's just not good enough, or their style of play isn't good enough, or his style of play doesn't translate to the playoffs. They're just not good enough.
Their offense is fairly and eerily reminiscent of the Cavs offense. I don't know if it was LeBron's first year back or it was the third year, where it was just like, we're going to stand at the top of the key and dribble the ball around and wait till there's 6 seconds left on the clock, and then we're going to do something with it. And it just drives me nuts. Like, they don't even do anything. There's no motion in the offense. They're not moving around.
You can't do that in the playoffs, because, you know, in the regular season, Harden's good enough and talented enough to be able to score on guys. Teams aren't scouting. They're not preparing for each individual opponent the way they are in a playoff series. And when you just stand around, you give the defense time to rest. You're not making a move, so you can't attack closeouts. You're basically just saying, James, you go beat somebody and either score or kick when we get help. But when the help is set and guys know what the rotations are, it just becomes so much more difficult in the playoffs for that to work. And I mean, it's a testament to Harden that he can score 35 points in a playoff game playing that way, but I just don't think that's a championship formula. So maybe that is D'Antoni, but I put more of it on Harden's shortcomings as a player than I do.
We haven't even mentioned the fact that he shot 7 of 12 from the free throw line, Mike.
Yeah, he didn't.
And they lost by 5.
Yeah. Well, and he's normally about, I don't know what he shot in the regular season. I would guess he was probably 86%, 87%.
I think it was 87%. I remember seeing 87%. And even in the series, he was 92% coming into the game today. And then he shot 7 of 12 at the free throw line.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say. Again, I've been on the train for a long, long time. I just don't think if he's your best player, I don't think you're winning a championship. And you know, it continues to be proven right year after year.
I don't know if you have the box score still pulled up, but if you had to guess who played the most minutes for Houston tonight.
I would say PJ Tucker, but I'm not looking at the box score. I guess
yeah,
I can.
Yeah, he did. He did 45 minutes. He played 45 minutes, Mike.
Well, they don't have anybody else. I mean, in the backcourt.
Kenneth Faried didn't even get a minute.
Well, Gerald Green was terrible. I mean, he took some really bad shots there.
He was 2 of 9, man. Come on, that's some great shooting.
He played very, very poorly. Austin Rivers was decent again tonight. I thought Nene's minutes were fine. Shump didn't really do anything positively or negatively. He kind of was a no-show. And I think that the Eric Gordon...
When Eric Gordon's in the game, he's to play defense. That's his only thing he's supposed to do.
I mean, Eric Gordon only getting 9 was a big factor. And to be honest, I think that... You know, it was just the difference in the game was Curry and Harden. And Curry made every big play and did everything that you'd want him to do in the moment. And Harden, as well as he may have played at times, and again, he scored 35, but in the moments, in the critical moments of the game where he needed to make a play, I just don't think he made the plays. And that was the difference.
I'm gonna slightly differ for you, and I think that Klay Thompson was really the person that, I mean, you just saw there's like 3 straight defensive possessions that he made. He had the held ball. He knocked the ball away on the possession before. And then didn't he block that shot that, who was it? It might've been Gordon or Gerald Green or someone jacked up a 3. I feel like he blocked that shot. So I think Klay Thompson, you know, he played the defensive piece. I guess Klay played the defensive piece. Steph played the offensive piece. And you know what, they would have been really interesting if Houston would have found a way to win, especially, I don't know what happened to Steph's finger, in those last few minutes, but I don't think it was for show. He was definitely hanging on to it.
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So this is going to buy them some time because obviously, you know, they don't have to play Sunday now. And I think the first game will be Wednesday if I read it right.
Yeah, that's what I'm guessing.
Western Conference Finals first game will be Wednesday, and the Eastern Conference Finals is going to be Tuesday, I think, is what I saw. Because I think they're alternating again.
I would think so.
But anyways, so I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say. I just think Now the inevitability of Golden State, you know, making the finals even without Kevin Durant is going to happen, and I guess we got to hope for Milwaukee. I don't think either of the other teams are going to have any chance. I don't think Toronto or Philly has a shot. So we got to hope for Milwaukee and at least have the Giannis factor thrown in there.
Yeah, I mean, the disappointing part of this, at least from our perspective of wanting the Warriors to lose, is the fact that, you know, one, they didn't push him to another game seven where they'd obviously be playing without Durant. Two, I think now you look at it and you say, I'm not sure that Denver or Portland can compete with the Warriors even without Durant. Although, again, with Durant out, you know, I guess they might be able to give it a little bit more of a competitive
series. You have to think that Durant's going to sit at least game one in the Western Conference Finals, if not game one and two. Even if he is ready to come back, they're not going to push him back and chance him getting re-injured, right?
Well, I wouldn't think so. Not unless they feel like they're in a dangerous situation where they could actually lose and he might try to gut it out. But otherwise, I don't see where they bring him back any sooner than they need to
I think the only way he comes back by game two is if they lose game one in a convincingly fashion, and I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't either. All right, let's move on.
All right. So we'll talk about the other series that's wrapped up, Milwaukee, Boston. And like we kind of said, we expected it to happen this way. Milwaukee took care of business. Then they didn't just take care of business. They decimated Boston in game five and ended up winning the series 4-1. We were surprised by that, though, because I think on the last time we did this podcast, we talked about we didn't think there was any or I guess two times ago, we said there was we didn't think anyway. Milwaukee, after the first game, was going to come out of Boston anything but 2-2. But then Boston just completely fell apart. And now the whole free agency situation happens. And with Kyrie, and where is he going to go? And, you know, what's Boston going to do to try to retool their roster? Because obviously what they have isn't going to work.
Well, it's interesting. They have – there's so many moving parts there in Boston. Obviously the most – you know, the most famous one is the Kyrie situation and what are you going to do with him? Then you also have Al Horford, who has a player option for like $30 million. So does he opt into that player option and come back to the team? Does he,
I think he's dumb if he doesn't.
Does he go back out on the market and maybe try to get a 3-year, $60 million deal? I don't mean he's not getting $30 million a year for multiple years, but maybe he banks $60 million over three instead of $30 million over one. I'm not sure. Does he want to come back to Boston?
What team has that kind of space though that are going to want him? I don't know.
I don't know what the salary cap situation is across the league for these different teams, but Horford is a guy that has proven over the course of the playoffs that he's valuable as a center. He's a guy that can stay on the floor against all different kinds of teams. So I think there's going to be a market for him, despite the fact that, you know, he's getting a little bit older. So that will be an interesting situation to see if he opts in. And then Boston also has, I think I read today that they have 4 number one draft picks in this particular draft. None of them, I think, will end up in the top 10 based on the teams that they have and where they are. Maybe it's the top 9. I can't remember. But so they have this big war chest of assets, but what are they going to try to go out and do? Are they really going to go and trade all that they have? They're going to put Tatum or Jaylen Brown or whoever into this package for Anthony Davis. And then you bring Anthony Davis in and you only have him.
Did you see that he sat down with David Griffin and he's holding firm on his, I want to be traded, even though meeting with Griffin?
I did not see that.
So obviously that's an option. Anthony Davis is an option. It sounds like there's not going to be any,
but if you're Boston, if you're Boston, are you going to empty out everything that you have for Anthony Davis for 1 year? And then if Kyrie, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter if Kyrie's there, if he's not there, whatever. Let's say that, I don't know. If you re-sign Kyrie to the max and now you got Davis in there and but you've traded away all your other assets and now Davis is there for a year and it implodes again and he leaves and then you traded Tatum and a bunch of number one picks, and now you're left with Kyrie and his bad knees and 3 more years on his contract. Ooh, it could get ugly fast. From where Boston was sitting, let's say a year ago, with just probably the best asset/roster on the league, you know, to now where they are, man, I don't know. I don't know what the, I don't know where they're what they're going to do, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out. And on the other side, that was just a tour de force for Milwaukee. I think there was a lot of doubts about Milwaukee based on just the fact that they had never won a playoff series and that Giannis was really, this was his first year kind of as the alpha dog in the league. And I think people questioned whether or not they were for real, and all their statistics and advanced metrics compared to historically great teams and title winning teams was very favorable to Milwaukee. I mean, they had a, I think they had a 9.5 point differential, and they just, again, they ran roughshod through the league, and they did the same thing to the Celtics. And after game one, when they kind of got stonewalled and Giannis couldn't get to the rim, after that, he just became just a wrecking machine. And I think they now have confidence. I would expect as they go forward, especially what they got Brogdon back, and he obviously played some minutes in game five, that with their full roster intact and everybody healthy and playing as well as they are, I expect them to beat either Philly or Toronto, whoever comes out of that series. And depending on who it is, you know, it could be whatever, a different number of games. But I still expect Milwaukee to come out of that series. And I know we hinted at it earlier, but I think they're the only team of those three that can honestly say they have a legitimate chance to beat the Warriors. And if Durant is somehow compromised, I don't know. I kind of like their chances. Although Golden State showed something tonight that I don't know that we all thought that they had that gear still left in them without Durant. And it's a little scary when you see that they were able to come out and win that game against Houston.
I know. Sorry to rehash this, but someone just tweeted something pretty funny. As I got the Rockets are Western Conference Raptors until further notice. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
All right. So I think that puts a bow on those two series. Well, let's go to the Eastern Conference other series.
Okay.
Toronto and Philly. I guess what we're going to do now is we're going to make predictions for this game sevens. So obviously, they're being played on Sunday. And then I think the plan is for Mike and I to come try to do one Sunday night, kind of recapping those two games and just talking about the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. But first, we got to talk about game seven. So, Mike, what do you think for Philly-Toronto Game 7 in Toronto?
So, my thoughts are, one, it's been a very, very odd series where one team has played well in games and then the other team's played terrible and vice versa. There hasn't really been a game that's come down to the wire where you're like, ooh, both teams are really playing at full capacity. I think that either one team's been playing well or the other team. So I guess I'm looking at it from a standpoint of who are the key players that need to come out and play well in order for either team to win. And I still maintain that for Philly, as important as Embiid is, I still think Simmons is their most important player. I think when he plays well, when he's aggressive, and I mentioned it the other day, but he's got kind of a, when he's playing well, he has kind of a arrogant sneer that he puts on his face. And when he's playing like that and you see that facial expression from him, he becomes a different player and Philly becomes a different team. And he's got to be aggressive. He's got to look to score. He's got to have the ball in his hands and be doing things. And when he does that, Philly is really tough to beat. And Jimmy Butler's been consistent. Obviously, Embiid has had a very, very strange series with all the illnesses and ailments and whatever. He had the one dominant game in game four. And then after that, you know, he hasn't really been the type of player that you would have hoped that he was going to be if you're a Philly fan. So I look at Simmons as being the key. I think if Simmons plays well, I think Philly can win it. Jimmy Butler's been pretty consistent. They haven't really got much out of Redick either. He's been relatively quiet, so he's probably due for, you know, a good game where he makes some threes. So I think Philly is going to rely on Simmons playing well. And then conversely, for the Raptors, you know what you're getting out of Kawhi. I think it's a matter of which Kyle Lowry do you get and which Marc Gasol do you get. If Lowry and Gasol somehow come up and, you know, if the two of them can combine for 30 points, 35 points, then I think Toronto wins the game easily. But neither one of them in this series, at least, and Lowry for the entirety of his career hasn't shown the propensity to come through in those big moments. So I'm going to pick Philly in this game. I had Philly in the series, and I just think even though they're on the road, I just like their team better. I like the totality of what they can put out on the floor better than what I like Toronto, better than what I think Toronto can put out there. I don't think Lowry and Gasol are going to come through, and I'm going to pick Philly in that game.
Okay. Okay. Before I make my selection, I want to ask you a question. Do we want to, in the, if we're thinking like we're basketball fans, do we want the team that's going to make the series the best, or do we want the team that's going to be the easiest for Milwaukee to beat?
All right, so that's, they a get the rest, that's a good get question. Golden
State. What is your, what is you, what would you root for, Mike?
All right, well, I'm rooting, I just don't like Toronto, so I'm rooting against Toronto. And I think Philly will be a more entertaining series. I think there's more interesting matchups, although I guess Kawhi versus Giannis would be an interesting matchup, but I think Philly can throw more different looks at the Bucks. I'm still not sure, though. I could see where the Bucks, to me, are just so methodical and precise that I could see Milwaukee. I could see Milwaukee just decimating Philly if things started to go south. And conversely, if things went well for Philly, I think that they could give Milwaukee everything that they could handle and potentially beat them. It's just a matter of, I think Philly's a great front-running team. When things are going well, I think they're continue to pile on. And when things don't go well, you know, they have a tendency to go in the tank. So I don't know. I think Philly's a tougher matchup. I think Philly's a tougher matchup for Milwaukee. I think Toronto.
So I'm picking Philly, but I'm rooting for Toronto because I think that Milwaukee could sweep Toronto without blinking an eye, because we've seen what happens. Okay. We've seen what happens when they played the Cavs. We've seen it in, you know, in the playoffs in so many years past. I think that Philly's going to win, but I'm going to root for Toronto. Which is kind of, I kind of feel dirty for doing that, Mike, but
I understand.
I'm purely doing that so that I can root for a Milwaukee sweep in the finals. And hopefully for some, whoever comes out of the Western Conference can give Golden State like a 5 or 6 game series and give them a slight advantage, not holding my breath on that. But I'm just saying, like, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. I do think that Milwaukee would have an easier time with Toronto, but you still have to factor in Kawhi is going to be great. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that he's going to continue to produce at the same level that he's produced in this series, which probably means that Milwaukee's not going to be able to sweep him out of the playoffs. Or, you know, I would guess that would be a 5 or 6 game series simply because Kawhi is going to continue to be good and the role players for Toronto will have a game or two where they play well. But I definitely think that Toronto is the easier of the two opponents for Milwaukee. But I kind of want to see Philly. I think for the other reason would be is that if for some reason Milwaukee does get upset, I don't think Toronto has any chance of competing with the Warriors. Where I think if Philly were to get by Milwaukee, that would mean they're playing pretty well, and they do have the size and athleticism and things that could theoretically, now I don't think they're going to beat Golden State. And to be honest, I don't even know if that series would be super competitive, but they have the type of athletes that if they were playing well, who knows? So I guess I'd rather see Philly Milwaukee with the possibility of one of those two teams going out of the finals. I don't want to watch Toronto in the NBA finals. I just don't.
Did you see they upheld that flagrant foul on Embiid? I don't know. Did you even see the field? Yeah, the Gasol. Yeah.
That was terrible. That was such. I mean, his hand made contact with Gasol, but then the flop back was like a half second after
that was
the contact.
That was right after we recorded last night, and I remember looking at you like, "Are you serious? Like, how is that even a?"
Yeah, that was terrible.
And I can't believe the league upheld it. It just blows my mind, because now, you know, if Embiid gets another flagrant foul, he's suspended a game.
Yeah,
he's reached his limit. So I don't know why the league would do that. Like, it wasn't even blatant. Like,
no, it seemed like that was just in the course of the two of them, you know, wrestling to box out. So, well, who knows? Hopefully he won't get another one in a critical moment.
Yeah. All right. So we'll shift over to the Western Conference, Portland, Denver. And, you know, Portland showed up last night and they needed to show up. So, now we're going to a game 7 in Denver, and I think much like you said in this series, you know, or in the first series we talked about just now. I think this series, you know, it seems like one game, one team plays well, the next game, the other team plays well. Although I felt like both teams played pretty competitive last night. I know, I don't remember what the final score ended up being, Mike. Was it 10, 12 point
win? Yeah, I think it was one. I want to say it was, I don't know, off the top of my head, I can't remember. Too many games going on.
Well, I'll be honest. I fell asleep about 1:15 or 12:15 last night, and my alarm went off at 12:45, and I woke up and saw that it was like a 14-point game with 2.5 minutes left, and I went to bed. So
119-108 was the final.
Okay, so 11 points. So, you know, Portland did a pretty good job, and obviously Dame showed up, and I remember McCollum looked pretty good in the first half. I don't know what he ended up in the second half, because I really don't remember much of the second half last night. But, you know, I'm proud of Portland. I still think Denver – I think Denver's going to win the series, and because I just think Jokic is going to be too much at home tomorrow or on Sunday.
All right, so Portland had – McCollum had 30, Lillard had 32, and our boy, theoretical Rodney Hood.
Oh, yeah, theoretical Rodney Hood had a great fourth quarter, right?
He had 25, scored 25 points in the game.
Not happening. Okay, over under, Mike. I'm going to put an over under. 13 points for Rodney Hood, game 7.
Okay, well, if you want to make that barometer, then I would say under. And if he goes under 13, I would anticipate Denver winning. If he somehow goes over 13 again, I think that that gives Portland a great chance. The interesting thing here is that we haven't had in this series, you haven't had a signature Damian Lillard game. I mean, he had 32 the other night, but even that wasn't an electric 32. And if I was Denver, that's what I'd be worried about. And, you know, I don't know what the odds are of him coming through with a huge 45 point effort, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility that he could go off in that game 7. And if I was Denver, that's what I would be concerned about. I think everything else that could potentially happen or could go on. I mean, we know Amino and Harkless aren't going to come up with big scoring games. Cantor is what he is. McCollum could play well, but he's played well the entire series. I would anticipate he's going to have a good game. And Rodney Hood, I can't see Rodney Hood scoring 25 or anywhere near that again. So I think it's going to come down to, can Lillard have one of those electric scoring games where he's 40 plus, and if he does, then I think Portland has a chance to win. If he doesn't, I think Denver at home, Jokic and Murray, I think are both going to probably play well, and if that's the case, then I would anticipate Denver winning that game. Now, I think it'll be a close game. I don't see it being a blowout like it was in game 5. I think that regardless of what happens, Portland's going to be in the game in the fourth quarter. So I think it's going to come down to what kind of game Lillard has. If Lillard can get up above 35, then I think Portland has a really good chance. If not, I would have to say Denver's going to win that game. And if I'm going to pick it, I would pick Denver, especially since they're at home. And I just think they have they've played too well at home. Murray and Jokic have played very, very well at home, and so I think they're going to pull it out and move on and try to challenge the Warriors.
Yeah, so I agree. I think Denver's going to win. You know, this goes back to the conversation that we had a few minutes ago. Who do we think gives Golden State the best chance to lose? I'm not saying I don't think Golden State is going to lose, but what team matches up better with Golden State, Mike? I think it's ironically, I think it's Portland. I don't think Denver matches up well with Golden State at all.
I think if you take Durant out, and you tell me that Durant's not going to play for the majority of the series or the entire series, then I think that skews it a little bit more in Denver's favor, in that I think if you have Jokic out there, like Kayvon Looney is not going to be able to guard Jokic, which means you might get more Andrew Bogut minutes, which
that was a kind of a train wreck tonight. He looked like he looked bad tonight.
Yeah, I'm not sure Looney is big enough, strong enough to deal with Jokic. And so if you can get more minutes putting Bogut out on the floor, I think that's a positive for Denver. Now, if Durant's back, then you're in a case where, you know, who does Jokic guard in the death lineup and where do you put him? And Jokic has been, he's been fine defensively and he's had to chase guys around, but he's not, I mean, he's not a great defender. They're gonna put him in pick and roll. They're gonna try to find him. Denver's already, you know, spent a lot of time in this series trying to hide Jamal Murray. And against Golden State, there's just nowhere to hide. So I think I would probably agree with you that Portland, probably just from a personnel standpoint, probably could match up better with Golden State. But I just don't think that Portland has the firepower offensively that's going to be necessary to be able to compete with Golden State night in and night out over the course of a 7-game series. I mean, Lillard and McCollum are going to, you know, combine. They're going to average 50 to 55 points a game in whatever series they play. But I just don't know beyond that, what are you getting? Like the other night in game 6, Kanter had 6. I don't know what he's averaging for this series, but he hasn't done much since the first couple games. He's been a lot quieter offensively. And if you're counting on Rodney Hood to be your big scorer off the bench, that's a dicey proposition. I'm not sure I'd want to be putting my eggs in the Rodney Hood basket over the course of a 7-game series against the Warriors. So I don't know.
Yeah, so his postseason, he's averaging Kanter's averaging 13 points per game in the postseason.
Which is good. Like, look, Kanter's been, I mean, he came off the waiver wire. So it's hard to argue with. He's been a very, very valuable piece. I mean, they don't get to where they are now without him. I mean, there's no question.
And by the way, he's doing all this without eating all day. By the way, the last two games, I think. They were talking on the broadcast last night that at halftime they were going to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches ready for him to eat because it would be sundown and he could smash some food at halftime. I can't imagine that's really good to go and eat a bunch of food. And
you wouldn't think so. Well, they also have had Zach Collins had a really good game in game 6-2. He had 5 blocks, 14 points, and played really well. He's feisty. And I think eventually, I don't know if he's quite ready this year, but in another year or two, I think he's going to become a key piece for what they're trying to do. So it'll be interesting to see how that game 7 plays out. Like I said, I'm picking Denver. I think because they're at home, I think Jokic and Murray will both play well. And barring a transcendent game from Dame, I don't think that Portland's going to have enough to knock them off on the road and get to the Western Conference Finals. So I think it's going to be Denver, Golden State, and Philly, Milwaukee for our conference final matchups.
That's kind of where I'm at too. I am gonna root for Toronto though, Mike. I'm sorry. I feel like I want to root for them.
You the North, man. You the North.
Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do.
Do we want to touch on the Laker coaching fiasco before we
can talk about it for a second? I don't know what they're gonna do. And you saw the protest. You saw they had a protest.
Yeah, I saw they were chanting "Fire Rambis." So
and then there was a protest, and the best part was Clipper Durrell. Do you know who that is?
I do not know Clipper Durrell. No.
He's the popular Clipper guy who sits on the sidelines and has like all Clipper garb, and he has a Twitter account and all this other stuff. He was there at the protest, and he got on the TV and said, "The fact that you have to protest against the Lakers means that the Clippers have finally taken over LA and join our cult or something." And he's wearing his Clippers blazer with Clippers t-shirt and pants on underneath. It's hilarious. Anyways, I think it's a fiasco. Obviously, you know, it sounds like LeBron's camp really wanted Lou, but they weren't going to pay him enough money.
Which totally doesn't make sense. I mean, why are you going to go and sign and have LeBron and then not? It's not like he's going to be happy and be like, "Oh, okay, you guys didn't do what I wanted." His history suggests that when he doesn't get what he wants, he's going to pout. And so I just don't know. I got to believe they're going to hire Jason Kidd.
Oh God.
Right.
Hopefully he doesn't spill any water.
But that's who they. I mean, that LeBron likes Jason Kidd. They were teammates on, you know, a world championship team or the Olympics or one of those things, and they were buddies. So I mean, otherwise, where are they going?
They hired Dwayne Wade.
Maybe. I mean, who are they trying to fire? I just don't know. If it's not Jason Kidd, I just don't know who you're hiring that has a previous relationship with LeBron. That's going to be able to deal with him. I just don't know who it is.
There was that rumor that Thibodeau, they were reaching out to Thibodeau to be on the bench. But then I saw someone tweet and said, "LeBron, if you thought you were retired this year, wait till Thibodeau is your coach."
LeBron's going to average 46 minutes a game. They might have to get They might have to get him a cryotherapy box that they just put at the end of the bench that he can go sit in it for his time when he's out of the game.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know where they go. I'm kind of on the same line with you. I guess Jason Kidd's probably the best choice at this point if they're seriously not going to go to Ty Lue. Now, maybe they'll circle back because they'll be desperate but there was also the rumor that was going on that there were people in Jeannie Buss's camp still trying to urge her to consider trading LeBron away. Which once again, I can't imagine that happening, Mike.
I can't either. But one of the things, I guess, if I'm thinking about it, it seems like, at least from some of the things that you read, that LeBron really wasn't necessarily embraced by the fans of the Lakers, and a lot of them were still loyal to Kobe, and there was sort of that LeBron-Kobe rivalry, even though they never met in the finals or really competed against each other for anything meaningful. So I don't know. Maybe that could happen. Again, where does LeBron go? Where would they even consider trading him? I have no idea what his contract's like.
Cleveland.
Does he have you win the number one pick, so now you picked up Zion. Kyrie's a free agent. Bring him back. Now you got the big three: Kyrie, Zion, LeBron.
Hey, we still got Kevin Love. You could get Dwayne Wade out of retirement. We'll probably be set, man.
So,
Carmelo on a veteran's minimum.
That is sweet.
Is Chris Paul a free agent?
That is sweet. He's not a free agent. I don't think we could fit him under the salary cap if we got all those other guys. So I don't know what the Lakers are going to do. It's a mess. And I think it's going to be Jason Kidd simply because of his past relationship with LeBron. And I don't know where you go from there. But maybe they can't pay Jason Kidd either. So who knows? Maybe they'll hire – Maybe they'll hire Drew Joyce. I'm sure
he'd go out there for a
smaller price.
Mike, I just had a great idea.
All right, lay it on me.
Phil Jackson, bring it back, baby. Let's go.
I think Phil's tending his cattle out in Montana. I don't think he's coming back to the NBA anytime soon. Although maybe, if they just like Magic, you pay him and then he just, kind of is a figurehead and sits around. Great. There you go.
I'll submit my name to the application process, and I will happily take $1 million to coach the Lakers this year. Mike, what do you think?
Done. I think you put it out.
I think it's a bargain.
I think you should tweet at, Jeannie Buss and make it happen.
I'm willing to coach the Lakers this season.
There you go. As long as it's a guaranteed contract, I think you're in.
All right. Sounds good to me.
All right, sir. We're going to wrap it up here, and we will be back probably after the two Sunday night game sevens wrap up. If we don't put it out Sunday night, we'll get together Monday and do it. And
Mike, we've got to remember
what
the draft lottery is Tuesday night, Mike. That's going to be crazy.
That's game one of the East, you said.
I believe. I read online that the draft lottery is at 7:30 or 8 o'clock on Tuesday night. So I'm assuming that's game one of the East.
So pre-game of the East. All right. Well, okay. So we might have two NBA pods coming up shortly. So we'll have one after the game sevens to wrap up those two games and then preview the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. And then once the lottery takes place, we'll jump back on and share our thoughts about that, which hopefully will be positive, but more than likely will cause us to be disgruntled and disappointed.
Damn reddish. That's
Zion's going somewhere else. So we'll see what happens. All right, Jay. Hey, we will come back with everybody on either Sunday night or Tuesday. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.